Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the three obstacles to wealth, and the numbers to call if you want to get in are 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach us on 001-760-918-4300. I'm going to just set the tables before I go to the phone. So I'm going to share one of each of the obstacles to wealth at the top of each segment, and then I'll take your calls and we can talk about money. We can talk about any other aspect of your life where you just want to have more of what you want and less of what you don't. Now, the first obstacle to wealth is the desire for approval. And in order to kind of have a look at how the desire for approval works as an obstacle, just think about this. Imagine going up to 100 people and offering them whatever it is that you do for sale. So just offering them your services for sale. Now, and let's make half of the people that you know really well, and half of the people that are complete strangers. And just think for yourself, would you find it easier to approach the complete strangers, or would you find it easier to approach the people who know you really well? Now, when I do this in groups, basically the audiences tend to be pretty split. You know, about some of the people think, oh, I'd feel much more comfortable approaching the people I know, or I'd feel much more comfortable approaching the people I don't. But the thing that they have in common is that they wouldn't feel completely comfortable approaching both groups. And the reason for that is because we don't want to risk the disapproval of other people. And often that extends not just to people we know, but even the disapproval of complete strangers. So think about how much easier would it be for you to make money if your innate sense of well-being was so strong that you just didn't have to worry about what other people thought of you in order to feel safe and in order to feel happy. And in order to feel well. So here's a little look at, you know, how this desire for approval gets in engendered in us as we're growing up. So imagine for a moment that you're inside a little motel womb and you've been there for around 9 months and you're feeling completely at home, though lately things have been getting a little bit cramped. And you're relaxing on your heated waterbed, you're snacking on the placenta flavored potato chips and you're minding your own business. And then suddenly, boom! There's like an earthquake and it starts to shake the bed. And before you know it, you're being forced out through the door by an unseen force. And it's like a tornado has got you and you stumble out into the light and you get smacked on the butt by a big masked giant and you begin to scream. Well, that's birth. And it's hardly surprising that at that point, the desire for safety might begin to arise. And feeling safe and feeling well is a wonderful thing. But that initial experience of danger when you're first born is so profound that it can get triggered throughout your life. And they say there are only two natural fears, loud noises and falling. And, you know, you can relate those fairly easily to the birth experience and everything else. All other fears are learned. But because of that, you're going to begin to crave security. So not only knowing that you're safe, but knowing that you're always going to be safe. And that's sort of an illusory feeling if you're relying on stuff outside you to create the feeling. But what we do is anytime we feel unsafe, we look to control our environment and we look to control the people around us because that, we think, is going to keep us safe. Now, as it happens, some people will allow us to control them up to a point and we can control them through, you know, being really, really angry or really, really scared or really, really anything. And if through our anger and our sadness and our fear, we can stimulate their insecurity and wanting to be safe, then they'll let us control them because they were born too. But sooner or later, you come to the conclusion that you're not going to be able to control everyone. So you got to work out, okay, if I can't control people, how can I stay safe around them? This is all based on the illusion that the safety comes from outside you. So, well, it turns out, and you probably figured this out pretty quickly when you were young, that if people approved of what you were doing, they wouldn't hurt you, at least most of the time. But if they disapproved of you, well, so what you learn to do is you learn to be nice and you learn to do as you're told, so that they will approve of you and you get to stay safe, at least for as long as they keep approving of you. So this is really just a long way of saying the desire for approval, which is the first obstacle to wealth, is really the desire for safety. It's the desire for well-being. And it's never going to be found if you keep looking for it in the wrong place, which is outside of you. So there's two things that you can do to overcome this first obstacle, the desire for approval. And I'm going to go to the phones. The numbers to call, again, if you want to get in, talk about wealth, but also just talk about having what you want in any area of your life. Our 866-254-1579, toll free, 866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 760-918-4300. So the two things that you can do to overcome the desire for approval as an obstacle to wealth is, first one's just find the source of your well-being, and that's inside you. It's not the fruit of what you do, it's the essence of who you are. And the reason that you can't find lasting well-being outside you isn't because you're looking in the wrong place, or you haven't met the right guy yet, or the right woman yet, or you aren't in the right job yet. It's just because you can't find something that's never been lost. And again, that's an innocent mistake, right? Everyone told you from the time you were old enough to understand language that you'll be happy when you get what you want. You'll be happy when you do as you're told. You'll be happy when you get what we tell you you should want. But reality's kind of kinder than that, because when you connect with the good feelings that you were born with, and we were all born with them, and they're always there inside you, and they're going to effortlessly carry you all the way back to the source of that well-being. Now, the other thing that you can do that will really make a difference in overcoming the obstacle about the desire for approval is actually seeing that money and making money is a worthy goal. Because if you don't quite get over the whole desire for approval thing, then at the very least, what you can do is you can realize that making money actually is one of the single most important things that you can do. Not more important than love, not more important than having a wonderful life, not more important than service. When you kind of start to see it as something that you're not going to be disapproved of for doing, but how you can use money to improve the quality of life for yourself and to improve the quality of life for other people by having more resources available with which to do so, then you can make your peace with money, not as a necessary evil, but as a desired for good. So with all that in mind, and we're going to come on with a couple more obstacles in the next segments, let's go to the phones and let's start overseas. Let's begin with Chris in London. Chris, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. It's so nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you were just talking about money, and I feel like my relationship with money is similar to what you just said. I want to be prosperous in order to give also. And I don't have a lot of money, and I'm okay with my situation now. But I feel like I have a tendency when I want to make money, when I get close to achieving success, I self-sabotage myself.
Oh, this is one of my favorite things, because I love self-sabotage, because it always sounds so mean. It makes me think of World War II films and U-boats and things like this. So how do you do it? How do you blow yourself up?
Well, somehow I don't allow myself to succeed, and I don't know why. I tend to, right before I can make a success, I just give up or get lazy or get doubtful or something like that. Something happens.
Okay, so can you give me an example of that? Because I don't really believe in self-sabotage. So let's see what is going on there. So can you give me an example of something that you have been describing as self-sabotage?
Well, can I give you an example relating?
Yeah, it doesn't have to have anything to do with money. That's just me. That's just what I'm rambling about. That's
okay. So in terms of I'm doing my PhD right now. And in terms of my PhD, right when I feel like I'm getting to that mark where I got my idea and everything is working out right, right when I feel like I'm ready to go, I stop and I lose all interest, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't go forward when I know just before that I've had all that amazing feeling to go forward. Does that make any sense?
Well, it's familiar. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it's familiar is because a lot of people try and base their decisions not on what they want to do, but on what they feel like doing. And there's a fundamental difference between doing what you want and limiting yourself to doing what you feel like doing.
Mm-hmm.
Your desire to, let's say, get the PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That exists outside of your moods. You know, and mm-hmm. sometimes you're going to be in the mood to do the work and sometimes you're not. But even when you're not in the mood to do the work, that doesn't mean you've stopped wanting the PhD.
Right.
So
how do I keep that mood in line with my goals?
but simply by recognizing that your moods will shift And it doesn't matter. You can do the work in a bad mood. You can do the work in a good mood. You can do the work when you're inspired. You can do the work when you're not inspired. But if you stop thinking that you're supposed to always feel like it in order to do it, it's pretty easy to get stuff done.
Well, the strange thing is when I'm in that great mood, I stop, not when I'm in the bad mood.
Okay. So there's a couple of things that it could be. And again, one of the things that is very tempting to do is to turn it into a diagnosis. And to go, this is what's wrong with Chris. You see, when you were a child, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I'm not even saying that there isn't some merit to doing that at some point, but in terms of getting stuff done, understanding the different ways that you're messed up isn't going to help you.
Right.
All that actually matters is, so let me ask you the question straight out. Do you want to get your PhD?
Absolutely.
Okay. So then what I'm going to suggest is that you create for yourself a little daily mark for, you know, okay, here is the least that I can do, that if I do this or a bit more each day, I'm going to wind up completing my coursework.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be an hour of study. That might be half an hour. That might be 2 hours. That might be one page of writing. I mean, I'm really talking about the smallest amount that you can get away with doing to get through. And simply make one commitment. And the commitment is, okay, I will do this each day. Or 5 days out of seven, or however you decide to break it down. I'll do it whether I feel like it. I'll do it if I don't feel like it. I'll do it if I'm busy. I'll do it if I've got plenty of time. If I am in the mood, I may let myself do even more.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, that's it. That's my work. I'm done for the day on my PhD when I've done that. That's it. Because
so
getting
minimal
stuff.
Minimal goals.
Minimal goals and just, you know, have an average day.
Yeah.
You know, do an average amount each day and you get there. And then it takes it out of the realm of having to feel right or having to think right. It just makes the whole thing so much simpler, Chris. We give it a go?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.
Fantastic, Dr. Chris.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Utah. Let's go to Misha. Misha, how can I help you? What can I do for you today?
My husband and I, we started out this new adventure on going into real estate, and we borrowed some money to go ahead and do that, but we, both of us, especially me, are so afraid of failing that it seems like any time that something good happens, I'll get deathly ill or something like that, and we never, ever get that, and we're always in, like, a poverty-type state.
Okay, so you're so afraid of failing that you force yourself to fail?
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, makes an interesting kind of sense, you know, because once you fail, then you don't have to be scared of it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I mean, I kind of, that kind of makes sense to me, you know? So, but here's the thing, okay? How do you fail? I don't quite get how you can actually fail at something.
It's just that I don't know. We'll start out and I will go into something and say, I'll give you an example. I got some money together and I started doing all kinds of art things, and then my family and my husband's family said, oh no, Misha's not going to do anything great for Steven. So of course it's got to be a hoax, or she's going to do something bad to him. So we're going to get involved in offering $20,000 to leave her. And so then I just stopped what I was doing so that I could keep my husband.
Okay. So there's a family dynamic issue I'm not even going to touch there. let's see if we can simplify this right down. What's something that you would very much like that at the moment you feel unable to do or have?
Well, I would really like to just be able to make enough money to pay our bills and get out of debt.
Fantastic. And can you give me a rough idea of what that number is like? Is that like, you know, $5 million a week?
It's about $30,000 altogether. But get into our house, that's like I'd say $10,000 for the down payment.
Okay. So if you could raise $10,000 in the next, how long?
3 months or?
Well, okay. So 3 months would be great. And at what point would you decide that you'd failed?
Probably by next week.
Oh, okay. So yeah, okay. That gives me some parameters. So listen, here's what we're doing. Can you hang out with us over the break? Okay, so we're going to take a break. We're going to go to commercial in a minute. But what I want you to think about is I want you to give yourself 10 months on paper, just as an exercise. And I want you to come up with as many different combinations of ways over the break as you can for coming up with $10,000 in 10 months. And when we get back on air, I want you to tell me what you've come up with. Okay, you got 4 minutes. Starting now. Go!
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back with more of your calls and more thoughts on the obstacles to wealth right after this.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the obstacles to wealth, and we're talking with you about having what you want in any area of your life. Now, we're going to go back to Misha in just a moment. I'm going to give her a couple extra minutes to come up with as many ways as she can think of to generate an extra $10,000 in the next 10 months. But in the meantime, I want to share the second obstacle to wealth. So if the first obstacle is the desire for approval, then the next biggest thing that I come across working with my clients that gets in the way of their actually having money is the feeling that they need the money. Now, one of the first questions that I ask my clients is, how many days forward could you go without earning any money before you'd be out in the street? And the reality is that the answer is generally measured in months or even years, not days. Oh, well, I could go 3 months. I could go 6 months. Actually, I could go a couple years. Or the most common answer is actually some variation on I'd never be out on the street because my family or my friends or my community would make sure that I always had a place to stay until I got back on my feet. And, you know, I used to sort of believe in that whole idea that, you know, I needed the money. And what really kind of cured me of that was a client I worked with who I asked the question, you know, my question, how many days forward could you go without earning any money before you'd be out on the street? Because this was somebody who was panicked about, how am I going to earn a little extra money? I can't do it. And he finally stopped and did the math and went, okay, I could go 10 years. Now, he's kind of sheepish about that. And we created a little experiment, a little 3-year experiment over a 3-year period. He was going to only do what he was really inspired to do, what was a really true heartfelt desire, and he not what he thought he should do or needed to do. And we did this on the assumption that that would, if it was completely wrong, that would still give us 7 years for him to go back to doing things out of desperation. Now, he struggled with it for a few months. It took him a little while to adjust. In the first year of not needing the money, he made over 10 times as much money as he had made the year before, but for this time from doing work that he really loved doing, that he really wanted to do. So the question becomes, how is it that when we let go of neediness, it makes it easier for us to create wealth? And almost as important a question, you know, why do people, if you don't need the money, why do you act as if you do? So I'm going to just do a very quick take on this, and then we're going to go back to Misha. And the first thing is, why do you make more money when you stop needing it? Because There's really, we do stuff because we think we have to, out of a sense of desperation, because we think we should, out of a sense of rationalization, or because we want to, out of a sense of inspiration. And when you're acting out of desperation, you've got to settle for whatever's on offer. And there's generally a sense of urgency, which means that whoever's got the money, basically, they're the ones in charge, and you've got to do whatever they say, and you better just take whatever you can get. And probably because you're not feeling very comfortable with yourself because you need the money, you're going to try really hard to please them, and or you're going to put on a front. You're going to be like all cool and like, hey, I don't need the money. I don't care. I'm like, God's going to look after me. It's going to be fine. The problem is when you act like you don't need the money, but you believe that you do, you actually, there's such a cognitive dissonance between what's going on in your head and what the image you're trying to project in the world, this fake it till you make it kind of thing, that people don't even know why, but they just sense there's something not quite right with you. Ooh, that guy, I don't know. There's something, she's not quite comfortable in her own skin. I don't really feel comfortable hiring her. Ooh, I don't know why, but I just get a bad vibe. Whereas when you actually don't need the money and you're aware of that because you know you're going to be okay, at least for now. You move forward with a sense of ease and well-being. And it's easy to stick to your bottom line because you've always got another alternative, which is just getting on with your wonderful life. Because you can always offer your creativity and your skills at value creation and difference making to any of the hundreds or thousands or millions of other people who would benefit from them. So with that in mind, let's go back to Misha. Misha, you still with us?
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
So share. What are some of the things
All
you've
right.
come up with?
Well, I put down that I could start selling my art instead of actually not charging people when I do it.
Okay. It sounds crazy, but it just might work.
Well, I'm always afraid they don't like it. So I
right,
just say,
which is just
you can have it.
Right, which is just the desire for approval, by the way. It's
yeah.
that first wealth obstacle. Okay, so what
and
else?
And then sell our real estate in mobile homes. And I could sell the quilts that I make instead of giving those away. Mm-hmm. And save 20% of each of my husband's checks.
Okay.
And then stop spending money on non-important items. Go out and get a job myself instead of being a stay-at-home mother. Sell our excess items in our home. Go back into massage therapy and charge for that as well. Have my husband start another higher-paying job.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and invest in what we wanted to. And then stop giving out money to friends.
Okay, so here's what I want you to notice. A couple things, Misha. The first one is that took less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, some of those you might decide, you know what, interesting idea, no interest in it at all. But are there one or two things on that list that you look at and you go, you know what, I could give this a go?
Yeah, it actually made sense once I wrote it down.
See, the reason that you were able to do that is because we've all got an innate wisdom. We've all got within us that creative capacity to generate the answers to our own questions and the solutions to our own problems. But we don't think that we do, and we're so busy panicking that we don't actually bother to tune in and find out.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you two pieces of homework. Okay.
All right.
Your first one is to keep playing that game. At least once a day, sit down for 5-10 minutes, that's all you got to take, and just come up with as many different ways as you can of generating. Let's start with your number, $10,000 in 10 months.
Okay.
And then take one of the ideas. It doesn't matter which one. It doesn't matter if it's a big one or a little one. And in the next week, just begin to do that one idea.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah,
and then please
doable.
Do, you know, either come to geniuscatalyst.com and post something on the forums or just phone back into the show in a few, a month or two's time and let us know how you're getting
Great.
On.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much,
Bye-bye.
Misha. You're welcome. Okay, let's go. Where are we going? Oh, okay. The board's all changed since last time I looked. Let's go to Margaret in Michigan. Margaret, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, hi, Michael. My question is about fear. I know this is going to sound goofy, but...
Oh, good. I like Goofy. I mean, I like Pluto as well and Mickey, but Goofy is one of my favorites.
It's about being afraid of wealth. Like, because I've never been wealthy, I'm afraid that I wouldn't know how to act or be or how to take care of it or how to maintain.
So here's the, okay, so what's really interesting, Margaret, is I just spaced for a minute there and thought you were talking about a puppy. And I think that's probably because you are, in a way. In other words, if you didn't know how to take care of a puppy...
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
But you really loved puppies because they seemed really cute and maybe the people around you said, oh, you should get a puppy. Really, you'd love puppies. I'm going to guess that your concern and fear about not knowing how to handle it would be a call to action to learn about it, not a reason to not do it. Is that fair?
To some extent.
So I'm going to suggest that the only difference here is that you're thinking of money as being something that you either are born with an ability to deal with or not, that either you happen to be brought up that way or you weren't. Whereas it's just like a puppy. It's just like, you know, yeah, you've got to learn.
Okay.
You know, it's a new set of skills. You know, I've got my kids right now and, you know, they've learned in the last couple of years how to care for dogs, how to care for cats, how to care for rabbits. one day they'll learn how to care for themselves. We're working on it. But you know, there's a learning curve there. And the fact is, it doesn't matter at what age. See, I'd never had a rabbit before. I'd had dogs and cats. So when we got the rabbit, I had to sort of start from scratch and realize, you know, there are certain things that rabbits do that dogs and cats don't. And if you can see that it actually, it's what cures fear isn't courage. It's information. It's knowledge. It's understanding.
So probably a good first step would be to take some type of a course in money management.
You know, you could start with a course in money management. I would start even simpler. I would grab a book like, I'm trying to think of one of my favorites. There's a lovely book called Wealth Happens One Day at a Time by Brooke M. Stevens. And it's really nice. It's written out in sort of 365 simple, like really simple, like most of them are less than a page. Tips starting from with the assumption that you know nothing about money, and you can work through one a day, or you can work through them more than one a day. But in about 5 minutes a day, that's about the gentlest introduction to the world of money that I'm aware of. And if you go through that book, there is no way that you within 1 or 2 months you're going to be absolutely like, oh, I get it.
And it's called what again?
Wealth Happens One Day at a Time by Brooke Stevens.
Okay.
And, you know, you can also always just go down your bookshop and look in the financial section. But most of the books there, if you don't know what you're looking for, it could be like, oh, my God, there's so much information and I know so little and I'm so pathetic and I suck. Ah! You know, so it's nice to start with something gentle.
Okay.
All right. And what I can tell you is that in the same way as the first thing you do before getting a puppy would probably be get a book on puppies.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
You know, the first thing to do in order to begin to become a custodian of wealth is to learn a bit about what it takes to be a custodian of wealth. And that's a very kind of simple learning. And once you start to get into it, like anything else that you learn, you'll find there are certain aspects of it that you become particularly curious about. And those are the bits where you're going to then go off and make your own choices about where to learn more.
Okay.
All right. You up for that?
I am. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Let's see. We've been in Michigan. Let's go to the East Coast. Let's go to Jamie in Milton, New Hampshire. Jamie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I've become debt-free within the last year or so.
Congrats.
Thank you. And I quit my high-paying job shortly after we became debt-free because we had a new baby.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've become so extremely frugal that I'm afraid to spend any money at all.
Right.
So,
because what will happen if you do?
Horrible things.
Which horrible things specifically?
Well, the problem is that I have about $30,000 in the bank as an emergency fund too, so nothing horribly bad will happen, at least for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep telling myself that, you know, I can't touch that $30,000, so I feel broke.
Right. And do you understand why you're doing that?
I'm trying to scare myself to make more money, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're trying to scare yourself safe.
Exactly.
Right, which is lovely if you want to spend your life living in fear. But the problem is it doesn't work anyways, because what it actually does is it makes you feel insecure and it makes you feel stressed, and then you wind up, usually most people, wind up swinging the other way and going, you know, I've been so frugal, I'm going to go and I deserve a treat, and then you go and blow a bunch of it on something. Or if you're really metaphysical, you create a crisis and then that eats the money up anyways and you're broke again. So I've got a better idea,
okay.
if I may, not to be presumptuous, but you did call me. So here's what I would suggest is that begin to look at actually creating a plan. Okay, so think about where you'd like to be financially, say in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. You know, in other words, what you want money for. You know, not so, well, if I have this much, I'll feel safe. Because you won't, because you'll find a way to get scared then too.
Yeah.
But simply, like, what do you actually want the money for? You know, so start to think about, well, you know what? I really would like to do this course, or I'd really like to be able to, you know, send my baby to private school, or, you know, I'd love for my husband to be able to leave his job, or I want to give myself, a year or two at this new thing before the pressure for it to start really making money comes in. So figure out what you want the money for.
Well, actually, I have a large list a month in Spain. I mean, many, many things. Most of them are business ideas, actually.
Great.
But I won't even spend my money on business ideas.
But see, now, again, I kind of applaud that until you've thought the whole thing through. And all I mean by thinking the whole thing through, it's not like a 7-year plan here. We're talking about like a weekend.
Mm.
But where you actually sit down and you look at the bigger picture, you look at what you'd like to spend money on. And if you go to my website, I think you can still get on geniuscatalyst.com. There's a video called How to Spend Money. And you should be able to just click on it from the front page. If for some reason you can't, then... how are we going to do this? Okay, here's what we're going to do. You can email me, and I'm going to give out an email address. These emails, just so people know, if you're listening, I do read them, but I don't necessarily respond to them, and someone else reads them first. But if you send an email to michael@geniuscatalyst.com, mm-hmm. I will get it. And if you can't, for some reason, actually just click on the little movie, it's about a 10-minute little film, then we'll send you a copy of it. And that's going to take you through a really nice, easy way that you and your husband could sit down and create a sort of a spending plan. And then as part of that plan, then you'll be able to look at it and go, oh, okay, I see what this is for. I see where I'm going, and I see what I've got in line to create more money going forward. And at that point, again, the fear will be gone because the need for the fear will be gone. Not because you suddenly got courageous, but because you suddenly went, oh, I don't need to scare myself about this because I actually have a plan and I know what I'm doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So enjoy, Jamie. All right. So we will be back with the third obstacle to wealth and more of your calls coming right up after the break. Bye-bye for now.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the three obstacles to wealth, but we're also just talking about having what you want in any area of your life, and we're talking with you. I'm actually going to go back to the phones before we come. I'll finish up with the third obstacle to wealth. So let's go to Florida and talk with Cindy. Cindy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hello.
Hello. I know you've been on hold for several years, but thank you for hanging on. What can I do for you today?
So much of what you've said and your other callers, I can relate to. I seem to work hard. I work, you know, two jobs, and I'm always, something always comes up, and, you know, I can never get ahead, and I just wondered if there was any suggestion you could give to me.
Yeah. And I'll start with the generic before I get to the specific. I don't know. Have you read You Can Have What You Want?
No, but I will.
Well, for God's sake, girl, go out and get a copy. Because in there, I tell the story I'm about to tell you now, so you don't really need to read the book. But that book came about as a result of a conversation I had in the back of a cab. I got into a cab in Chicago and got into a conversation with this cab driver named Adolf, which is why I think his name stuck with me. You don't meet many Adolfs these days. And he was from Ghana, and we were just talking, and he asked me that same question, you know, once he found out what I did, you know, and he had been 17 years, and he'd been sending all the money that he made. He'd worked 365 days a year, sent all the money, extra money that he made back to his family to put his brothers and sisters through school and, you know, look after his mother. And he had just sort of hit a crisis point where, you know, he'd been working on Christmas Day, and he was a Christian, and he sort of felt bad enough about that. But then his mother phoned from Ghana, and, you know, he pretended as he was driving this cab around Chicago in the snow trying to find fares that he was at home, you know, and that he'd been to church in the morning. And he sort of, I just was one of those experiences where, you know, right place, right time. And really, there are two different ways to look at it. And the first is, you know, are you doing what you're doing in order to get ahead, or are you doing what you're doing because it's what you really want to do? And I'm not asking yet for an answer, but it's just something to begin thinking about, because there's a fundamental difference between the way you approach things when you're doing them for a very good reason than when you're doing them because they really at some fundamental level are what you want to be doing. If you want to create effortless success, if you want to create the extra money from a place of ease and well-being, then you're going to get a lot further, a lot quicker by following what you really want than by doing it the right way, than by doing what makes sense. So that's one thing to think about. And I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to start with the general and then I'm going to get to the specific. The other thing is sometimes it is as simple as deciding to make saving money more important. One of the early definitions I was given when I was first studying money was the difference between a rich person and a poor person is that rich people save money and spend what's left, and poor people spend money and save what's left. Now, that's one of those things where it's a little bit generalized and it can feel very unfair when it's said and people go, well, you don't know my situation. And of course I don't. But sometimes it is as simple as a priority question. So for you, which of those two tacks feels most relevant to you?
The first one.
Okay, great. So what's the dream? What's your dream?
Well, I'm not really clear anymore. I'm not sure. I've spent so much time being blown by the wind and doing what other people need that, you know, I'm in a job, a career, but it's not my first choice.
Great. So now, one thing is, if you know it's not your first choice, you must have some sense of what your first choice might be, even if you don't know specifically.
Oh, yeah. Medicine would be my first choice.
Okay. And what is it about medicine that you love?
I don't know. Ever since I was a little kid, that's all I ever thought about doing.
Okay. So if I could give you documentation that showed that when you were born, the reason you were put here was to pursue medicine, what would you do in order to begin to fulfill that? And this is like really cool documentation with like notary stamps from God and stuff.
Well, I would apply to medical school.
Okay.
Quit my job, study.
Okay. Now, would you necessarily quit your job straight away?
No, okay. I have a whole summer off here.
Okay. So here's the thing, Cindy. Okay, I don't have the documentation like officially because the paperwork's really backed up and the filing system up there is kind of crap. But the fact that you've just kind of always wanted to do that, there's a reason for that. And generally speaking, when you begin to follow that, things happen that you couldn't possibly have predicted. So I'm gonna offer you a sort of a gentle challenge, which is without messing up your life as it is now. So don't quit your job.
Okay.
But go ahead and grab an application. Find out when MCATs?
Right.
Find out when the next MCATs are. And see what starts to happen just by taking that first step.
The finances will follow.
The finances will follow. Or you'll realize as you do that, oh, you know what? It isn't this, it's this. In other words, it's not always linear. I'm not saying that, you know, and 5 years from now, call me when you're a doctor. I'm just saying take the first step.
You know, the next one, because where it has to start.
Absolutely. And I do look forward to hearing how it all goes. So please do phone back. Thank you very much, Cindy. Thank you for phoning in. All right. Well, that was fun. Let's see. Where should we go next? Let's go to Missouri. I've not been to Missouri today. Tina, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today? Hello, Tina.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
A pleasure.
My husband and I have a business that we've had for several years, and the problem is we can never seem to get steady cash flow. We're constantly in feast or famine state, and I'm really ready to move past that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's your theory?
You know, I don't really have one.
If you had to make one up, because everyone's got a theory.
I sometimes think that I block cash flow myself just out of fear of not having enough money, not being able to pay the bills.
Okay.
I have a lot of issues with that fear of basically going bankrupt or, you know, not being able to survive.
Okay. And how for you does that connect up? So let's say you've got those fears. Okay, so I'm going to be you for a day. I'm an actor. I'll get hair and makeup and I'll work on the voice. And I'm going to be you for the day. And I'm going to do that fear of going bankrupt the way that you do it. How do I use that fear to create flow or famine in my cash flow?
I think I avoid, I might avoid addressing needing to get money in from customers. Sometimes I avoid the office altogether.
Mm-hmm. What are the three things that if you didn't have to do them, that you've been avoiding, that if you could just delegate them, what are the three most important things you reckon you could do for cash flow that you aren't doing? But if you didn't have to do and someone else could do it, that would be great.
Have my customers pay me in a timely manner instead of, 60 or 90 days out.
Okay, great. So bill collection and really just the whole setup of how that works.
Right.
Okay, what's the second thing?
Financial management, just trying to figure out, just how to work the whole money situation so that wasn't my responsibility.
Okay, so financial management, so like systems.
Right.
Okay, great.
And maybe the third thing would just be sales.
Okay, and what about sales?
Making new contacts, getting new customers.
Okay, great. So here's what I'm going to suggest.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest that you set up one day a week, and it might wind up, when you start, most people say, I can't do a day a week, then make it half a day a week. If you can't do half a day a week, make it 2 hours a week. But actually put it in the schedule. And what that time is going to be for, and you can do this, if it works to do it with your husband, if it works better for one of you to do it on their own. But that time is to be dedicated to developing bill collection systems, rethinking the way that you do it, finding ways to do it, either finding people to do it for you or finding more efficient, more effective ways of doing it, to developing financial management systems, and to developing sales.
Okay.
And it really is in many ways that simple. This is a trick I learned from one of my mentors, a coach named Steve Chandler, is, when somebody says that something's really important to their business, the first thing he says is, show me your diary and show me the time that you have blocked out to work on that. And inevitably, there isn't any because it's something that they try and fit in around the work.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You got to put that as a big rock right there on the schedule. And what you'll find is all the other stuff will find a way to get done.
Okay.
So do you want to take that on as a challenge?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tina.
Thank you for your help.
It's a pleasure. Okay, I want to as we're winding down the show today, I want to share this third obstacle. Before I do, I always forget to do this. In London, May 24th, I'm going to be doing a one-day workshop at St. James's Church in Piccadilly on spiritual coaching. And May 25th, I'm going to be doing a half-day workshop at the Mind Body Spirit Festival called The Happy Millionaire, where we're going to be talking more about the kind of ideas that I've been talking on today's show. So if you're in London, you want to come to London, you can get information on both of those on my website at geniuscatalyst.com. You can also sign up for the free tips. And let me go ahead and talk about this third obstacle, because I think this is really kind of an important one because it's quite simple. And the third biggest obstacle, the first one is, remember, the sense that I've got to be, I need approval. And if I make money or don't make enough money, then I'm not going to get approval. The second one is, I need the money. You don't understand. I need the money. I got to have the money, which then blocks your creative flow. The third obstacle is a misunderstanding of how scarcity works. So economics, it's a vast field, and this is going to be a gross oversimplification, but you can break it down in some ways to one principle. The scarcer the resource, the more people are willing to give up in order to get it. The more common the resource, the less people are willing to give up in order to get it. So that means on the one hand, a plot of land in the heart of a city is always going to get more money than the same size plot of land in the country. And it's also the reason why people never bribe the maitre d' to get into a McDonald's. It's because there are McDonald's everywhere and you don't need to. Now, recent estimates that I looked up online place the wealth of the world at just over $44 trillion. Okay, that's quite enough money if we just divided it up amongst ourselves. The fundamental mistake, misunderstanding that nearly everyone makes that's an obstacle to your wealth is to think that money is a scarce resource. the reason that you put up with a boss who's kind of annoying and ignorant, with a job you don't really like, the reason the customer is always right, even when they're wrong, is because in both cases, they're the ones with the money, and you're seeing yourself as a common resource in pursuit of a scarce one. And there are two things to do that are going to turn that equation around. And the first is to just begin to see the abundance of money that surrounds you. Wherever you are, there is money around you. It might not be yours. It might not be in, you know, your particular sphere of influence right now. But begin to look around the world and just see how much money there actually is around you. Now, some people do that as a way of getting angry at the world. Look at all this money. Why don't I have any? But if you start to look at it and go, wow, there's a lot of money out there. This is fantastic. There's more than enough for all of us. All I want to do is find a way to get mine. And the simple rule of thumb is anywhere that there's a positive difference to be made, there's money to be made. Because if you can't or won't make any difference, then you're not going to make very much money. The key thing is to make yourself the scarce resource. My first mentor was a guy named Stuart Wilde. He's with Hay House now. And he used to tell stories about, you know, people who would attract customers to their gas stations by having the 5-star hotel quality restrooms, or, you know, people who ran shops who made hundreds of thousands of dollars from people who wanted to take home a piece of the store. And his advice was very simple. Work on yourself, work on your energy, work on your skills, develop your well-being. And what Stuart would say to us is, you become more and more skilled in what you do and happier in yourself, people are going to be drawn to you. They're going to want to spend time hanging out in your energy. And when they show up, bill them. And the point is this. As long as you see money as a scarce resource, you're going to continually inconvenience yourself in order to get it. As soon as you've created yourself as a scarce resource, the money is going to start inconveniencing itself to get to you. So have fun, learn heaps, and I'll look forward to talking to you next week. Bye-bye for now.